My new client is a successful 50-year-old businessman. He drinks alcohol daily and uses cocaine on the weekends. He lost his wife due to drinking and cheating, and he feels alone and fills that empty loneliness hole with alcohol. He is from a divorced family where his father was also an alcoholic, and my client was brought up by his grandmother. He does not complete my homeworks as he feels unable to write his feelings down, yet he's very much capable of expressing them verbally. Where would you start?
Okay, Petra. I would stop asking him to write his feelings down, which he probably have done already, because if it's not working, then we need to try something else. And he might be, you know, happy or comfortable or able to, you know, talk about his feelings in the session, but maybe just disinterested in writing them down. Not that would, you know, could be useful. But it seems he's trying to meet his needs via the imposters or fraudsters of alcohol and cocaine. You know, they're tricksters, you know. And I think many fraudsters and tricksters in traditional stories are probably pertaining to things that we adopt ourselves, like addictions and so forth. So I might, you know, whilst he's in deep hypnosis, tell him a story of a man who's lost in a strange country. And, you know, there are many beautiful and amazing places in this country. But the man keeps asking directions from a trickster who changes his disguise. You know, so it's the same being, but in different guises. And, you know, this trickster is charming and convincing. And the man, each time he encounters him, believes he really can help him. But the trickster always leads him to worse places and never to where he really needs or wants to be. But the man keeps being taken in by him. And what's more, you know, when the trickster journeys with the man, you know, leading him down all sorts of dead ends and cul-de-sacs, the fraudster steals from the man, you know, a bit like thuggies in ancient India. Thuggies would, you know, where the word thug comes from, would, you know, befriend travelers and journey with them sometimes days or weeks or even months, and then murder them and steal everything from them. You know, so they would get the person's trust, a little bit like an addiction gets your trust, you know, and then starts to convince you and blind you, and eventually might kill you as well, just like a thuggee. Okay. So, you know, taking his money, his dignity, and in this the case of your client, his wife as well, left him by the sounds of it because of his addictions and cheating as well. He may have been addicted to cheating. It sounds like he has an impulsivity problem. So what are we doing here? You know, we're reframing the alcohol and cocaine abuse as abusers, as tricksters, as con men. And you can start to stand up to these elements. You know, you can. So overcoming an addiction is essentially becoming more assertive. Okay. Therapists often don't see this as an assertiveness issue. Becoming more self-assertive. You know, the self that really has your best interests at heart, you know, standing up to the promptings, the innuendos, the manipulations, the demands of the addiction. And, you know, in our story, bit by bit, our man starts to see through the lies and the empty promises of this imposter. And he learns to ignore him and find a better guide, a guy that really has his best interests at heart. So he gets to where he needs to be. So that can be quite a powerful story, you know. Could be a better story than that, and it certainly could be told better. But, you know, so he's finding someone who isn't going to con or trick or lie or missell to him and so forth. So we don't spell it out, as we never do with therapeutic metaphor. But the alcohol and cocaine are two disguises of the same trickster. You know, you're stealing your drive to meet your emotional needs. And... diverting that drive to meet your need. Okay, so much of human life and human problems are to do with that very pattern, I think. So the question then is, how can we help your client stop listening to the lies of the addictive trance state? You know, one way is to remove the pattern from his core identity. You know, we were talking about the Gestalt empty chair technique and so forth. So you can begin to refer to the addiction as it's outside of him. How does it cheat you? If it was a person, what would it look like? What would it sound like? How would it convince you? What kinds of people see through this liar? What lies does it tell you? What makes it good at convincing you where others might be more skeptical of it? Okay. What has it stolen from you? Okay. If you carried on associating with it and believing its lies, what do you think it's going to steal from you in 5 years in the future and 10 years in the future or 15 years in the future? Okay. And so we're getting the person to sort of widen the context a bit in regard to this abusive relationship they have, you know, where they're being abused by this empty promise. He can express his feelings verbally, but he also needs to change his feelings, not just express them. So, you know, reframe the pattern as something outside of him that he can stand up to and see through, just as we do when we're treating smokers. You know, sometimes overcoming an addiction is in part about developing more assertiveness, as I said, you know, towards the addictive tactics and bullying. Okay, what's it trying to do to you? You know, and it can be backed up by peer pressure or even advertising, as in the case of smoking and so forth, or less so now. But, you know, so he's standing up to the sort of peer pressure and all those kinds of things. But it's outside, it's not really who he is. It's an imposter. Okay. So that's would be the approach that I take. Along with removing the pattern from his core identity through metaphor and the way you talk with him about the addictions, you know, you need to look at how he can genuinely and authentically meet his basic human needs. You know, I recall working with a chronic gambler who had lost over the years hundreds of thousands of pounds. And my first question to him was, how much have you won? And he said, £40,000. And I was impressed. And I thought, maybe I should give up this therapy lark and become a gambler. But then I said, how much have you lost? And he said, you know, £450,000. So kind of put it in perspective. So gambling had stolen his wife as well. You know, it had taken promising career from him because it had convinced him to steal from the company he was working with to fund the gambling, you know. So it had taken so much from him. And I asked him how much more he was prepared for it to take from him and steal from him. But I also asked an exception question. When had he not felt like gambling? And he said that, you know, he was working for a charity when he was at his bottom level, you know, sort of rock bottom. And, you know, he'd been a coach driver for children with special needs, and they'd gone on abroad somewhere for a couple of weeks. And although he could have gambled, he didn't. He didn't feel the need to gamble because his needs, you know, he felt needed, felt part of a larger community. He was busy doing other things, and he, you know, it just wasn't attractive to him anymore. So often when we meet the need, when we drink real water instead of engine oil in the desert, then we don't need, we lose interest in drinking the engine oil, you know. So focus on how you and he can work together to begin to help him meet his needs in healthy and sustainable ways. What else can you do at the weekends and so forth? You know, can you devise a plan for him? Because the pure will drive out the impure. So, you know, help him develop a plan in that sense of how to meet his primal needs. We also need to help him stand up in the moment to the promptings and manipulations of the addictive trance state. So I was talking about dopamine-laced memories causing amnesia, you know, for the addict. And, you know, you can remind him of that, and the tricks to induce his amnesia, you know, a bit of psychoeducation via the dopamine pathways. So that it can put you asleep, so to speak, so that it can steal from you. And you can help him access the feelings of him being about to fall under the trance of addiction, maybe as the weekend approaches, and then pollute that state, as it were, with a visceral sense of all the things that this trickster has stolen from him in the past and is trying to steal from him. So you're raining on his parade, so to speak. So in this way, we teach clients to remember when the dopamine-laced memories of the addictive pull try to induce them down a dead end and to step outside of that.
I'd never heard about thuggies before, Mark, either.
Yeah, that's the origin of the word thug.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a lot in there as an analogy. I was struck by hearing the reframe afresh. You know, I've worked in this field and with you, Mark, for some time, I've heard the reframe of, you know, addiction and the trickster stealing from you. numerous times in numerous ways, but suddenly hearing that shocking, example of the thuggies, and it takes you into a bit of history, and it talks about, travelers, someone being befriended for days or weeks before being murdered in their sleep. It's really shocking. And suddenly the whole reframe is brought to life in a new way. So it's a good education in delivering the reframe as well there.